Walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Kim Skrovanek, founder of the Humane Education Connection, which is based here in the Tampa Bay area, and describes its mission as striving to reduce the abuse of children and animals through educational programs that utilize the powerful connection of the human-animal bond. One such program that will likely be the focus of our conversation today is Canines Helping Kids in Crisis, which employs rescue dogs that have experienced neglect and or abuse themselves. The idea appears to be to cultivate compassion and kindness to help break the cycles of abuse and arrive at something resembling forgiveness for dogs and kids alike. We'll hear more about Canines Helping Kids in Crisis and the Humane Education Connection when I speak with Kim Skrovanek in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later, I'll speak briefly with Amber Simpson about the 7th Annual Tampa Vegan Bake Sale happening April 22nd at Mojo Books and Records here in Tampa. Funds raised at the bake sale help homeless and feral cats, and the event takes place at Mojo while it celebrates Record Store Day and marks the store's 10th anniversary. This features many of my favorite things rolled into one fab event. More about that later. Also, to get a jump on our summer fun drive, we're offering a pair of tickets to WANI for a $400 pledge. WANI is April 20th, 21st, 22nd, plus April 19th, a tribute to Butch Trucks. That's happening in Live Oaks. And among the bands performing over that weekend are Bob Weir and the Campfire Band, Widespread Panic, Dr. John, Trey Anastasio Band, J.J. Gray and Mofro, Modest Yahoo, Devin Almond Band, Cody and Luther Dickinson, Government Mule, Keller Williams, and more. And at this point, a $400 pledge for tickets for that whole weekend is kind of a steal, really. So if you're interested, please email me. It'd be hard for me to answer the phone for a pledge in the next little while. But if you are interested, please email dj@wmnf.org, and we will take it from there. Right now, though, let's get to Kim with dogs and kids helping each other heal, and that's H-E-A-L in this case, and learning to love and trust. With a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Kim Skrovanek to Talking Animals. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
And we should also note that in the, not only in the studio, but in, well, not Kim's lap now, but adjacent, Kim's lap adjacent, we have Brooklyn. And we'll get some pictures up on Brooklyn. Actually, I think there was a picture up of Brooklyn earlier today on Facebook, if not earlier in the week. So we'll have more cool images of Brooklyn in some form or another, maybe including a video at some point in the next day or two. But anyway, thank you for joining us today, Brooklyn and Kim.
Thank you. Thank you.
And, of course, in a few moments, we'll delve into Humane Education Connection and Canines Helping Kids in Crisis. But first, let's find out a little bit about you and the path you traveled before landing at the creation of the Humane Education Connection. First of all, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Florida, born and raised. I'm a Florida girl.
This part of Florida? Or?
Well, I was born in South Florida, moved up to North Florida for a while, but yes, longest in this area, St. Pete Seminole. Yes.
And what did animals mean when you were growing up, when you were a kid?
Oh, gosh, you're going to make me go there, aren't you?
Well, but not if you don't want to. No,
I was this little... I'm going to admit it right here on the air for everybody to hear. I was the girl who could sit and watch a lizard for hours because I was just fascinated by it and how it interacted with me. I mean, I brought home every stray.
I've heard much worse in the way of confession, so that seems pretty innocuous to me. But
I brought home all the strays, all the little bird strays, all the little kitty strays. Yes, our house was full.
So you were that kid.
I was that kid. Yeah. Yes.
And forever that way, probably, right?
I mean, oh, yeah.
Yeah. And how many animals actually lived in the house apart from the ones that you brought home or tended to or fixed up or whatever?
Oh, we always had animals, dogs, cats, like I said, birds, lizards, snakes. My brother was really into the reptiles and stuff, so we had those too. I had a pony at one time. Yeah, I was the little girl with the pony, birthday pony. So
it's probably safe to say in your family, animals were highly respected, if not revered.
They were. And very compassionate. I mean, I'm a Cancerian, so I cried over everything. Every little herd animal everything deserved respect and kindness. Yeah.
So then as you went from that, growing up that way, what was it like as you reached into adulthood? I mean, what was the importance to you of animals as you moved in, probably out of that house and into adulthood?
Well, they always seem to find me. And, it's interesting because they always come into your life just at the right moment. You know, when you need that love I can't even think of the word right now, but just unconditional love of the animals to where, you know, they didn't want anything in return other than your love and to be taken care of and to be treated nicely. So they were always really important to me throughout my life. This is really far back in my life, but I started out, believe it or not, as an actress. And and even then I always said to myself and to my friends that if I ever gained any type of notoriety, that I would use it to benefit animals in some way, for the cause of animals, for conservation, for, you know, helping animals from wildlife to domesticated pets to be treated kindly. So while that career path didn't work out, I'm doing it now in a different way. So this is definitely my true calling, what I'm on this earth meant to do.
Were you still involved directly with animals while you were in the midst of your acting career, or?
Well, at that point, because, you know, moving to California and all that, I always had animals, and I'm not one to, you know, I moved, I made sure I took them with me, and, you know, so personally, yes, and but not directly, you know, directly doing anything. I would foster once in a while, and if the strays always seem to find you when you have that heart.
Sure, right.
For animals and helping
that
in that
radar
way. But
yeah,
it wasn't until I started getting into rescue and fostering and things like that as I gave up the acting and came back.
I see. So how long have you been back then overall from California?
It's a long time, about 20
okay.
years
oh,
now.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. And when I came back, I actually, in my early 30s, decided to go to college. And I was going to be a marine biologist. And I had public relations and marketing background through work. And a counselor talked me into doing that, but for an animal organization. And that's exactly how I started out, doing marketing for Boyd Hill Nature Park.
Wow, very cool.
In my marketing career. Yes.
Well, let me let folks know, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Kim Skrovanek, founder of the Humane Education Connection, whose programs include Canines Helping Kids in Crisis. If you'd like to ask Kim a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So now this may be getting into an area that's a little personal, and I'll trust that you'll say if that's the case, but what sort of experience at any point did you have with abuse, or how did you kind of gravitate towards that as a cause that you obviously really threw all your experience and passion for animals into?
Right. Well, personally, I was very blessed with my upbringing and my family. What happened is getting into rescue and starting to foster and really delving into that, I saw all the abuse on the animals, and that's where my passion started. It's just incredible when you're into rescue, how much abuse you see, neglect, mistreatment, and just general, for lack of a better word, ignorance on a lot of people's part from, you know, different cultures and things like that. And so I started thinking, well, while these animals need help right now, which I was doing through fostering and rescue, I thought, how can I help future generations of animals? How can I maybe help stop some of this abuse and neglect and learned behaviors? And through my research, it all shows that children who've experienced those cultures, from the dogfighting cultures all the way up to them being abused, are most likely to repeat those learned behaviors.
So it sounds like then you focused on all the animals that you'd seen with all your work in animal welfare and rescue, et cetera, and then worked backwards from there into humans and what had happened to them such that they might neglect or abuse an animal.
Right. So I went into it for the animals And then once I started going, so that's why we directly go into shelters. We go into homeless shelters, women's safe house shelters to work with their children. We go into group home type, foster group home type situations to where we are directly, you know, touching these children that have actually experienced these behaviors. You know, instead of just going to a school and hoping that one of them are sitting there in the classroom, we know we're going directly to the ones who are more likely to have experienced that, those situations.
Sure.
And that's why we chose to go that route and be that focused into the facilities we go into. And yes, it did start with my passion for the animals. And then I quickly learned that these children, too, are victims, that they're not born innately to be that way, that to, you know, possibly repeat the abuse and those behaviors. I learned that it's very much a learned behavior, and those two, they too are victims. And I mean, you'll never know what it feels like unless you're directly involved with it. For a little 5-year-old to come up to you and say, yeah, my mom and dad's going to be arrested when they find them because they left me and my little brother at a hotel room. You know, or some of the things that you hear.
Yeah.
And it was just so sad. I was like, wow, you know, so then my heart really grew for the children as well, you know,
sure.
and to help them. And
once you made that connection and sort of, and again, sort of worked backwards from what you had seen with the animals, what kind of research and maybe even what kind of training did you undergo to be able to work with or help identify the kids that had been victims of that kind of neglect or abuse themselves?
Right, right.
I should note that Brooklyn is licking Kim aggressively to the point of distraction, but probably the happiest distraction you could imagine.
Apparently, I need a bath. We are not therapists, and that's the first thing we tell the shelters. That's not the type of program that we are. They have those the therapists and things at the shelters. I do have my mentor and this wonderful lady who taught me everything I know, who's been in humane education forever, Joan Marzi. She is my mentor and my second mother. I love her. And when I come across a child through my research that I feel is something more than a learnt behavior. Oh, and there goes Brooklyn on the floor.
Uh-oh.
Sorry about
all
that.
Right. No, that's, you know, she's very active.
Oh,
and,
she is.
Yeah.
She is. Joan Marzi will come in and work with them and determine, you know, what she sees. And then she will, if it's something that... you know, needs to be brought to the attention of the therapist at the shelter. So they have pros there.
And so what is Joan's background? Is she a therapist?
Humane education.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. She used to work for National Humane Society, going out doing humane education, teaching and stuff like that. So years and years and years and years.
Right. So when you launched Humane Education Connection, was that sort of an offshoot of something that Joan had done, or did she help kind of shape you on that?
Yes, definitely. I actually had worked under her for another organization that's no longer around. That went into schools and
general. Odd in a way, given the need that we've already kind of established here, that an organization doing that kind of work would go under. It sounds. Is that what you mean? I think they just decided to fold.
And they weren't as specific as we were working with. They went into schools and stuff and more or less taught other things in general using the pet. They weren't as curriculum based as we are. And that's how we're a little different than your traditional pet therapy, is that we do focus on these types of situations. We're educational based. So we go in and we do fun activities. They're fun activities for the kids, but every activity has an underlying message of compassion and kindness. So while the dogs are always there as that connection for the children to relate to and come out of their shells, I mean, I've brought in yoga instructors to show the children how to, you know, have alternative ways to relax and deal with the challenges they face. So it's really about healing the children.
Yeah.
So we do a lot of wonderful, empowering programs for the children. First off, for them to start loving themselves and realize that they're important on this earth and that they have a job to do here too, and that they too can forgive and go on to do great things for others. And that's exactly why we use rescue dogs, and we require all of our dogs to be rescue dogs, because I teach the children that these dogs have experienced a lot of the same things that you have experienced, and that they've forgiven people. And I ask them, how do you know how I know they've forgiven? And they say, how? And I said, because they can come in and be nice to you and trust you and love you. if they hadn't forgiven, they wouldn't be able to do that. They'd be afraid. They might bite. They wouldn't be able to come in and visit you.
Yeah.
So I teach them that they too, just like the dog, can go on to forgive and open their hearts again to trust humans and to love again.
Powerful lessons. And I certainly want to circle back to the dogs, how you identify, select the ones, and then what kind of training they might undergo. But let's talk a little bit more about this curriculum. So is the curriculum like a certain prescribed period, like 8 weeks? Or, I mean, how does that work? Is there a building of the lessons, and how many lessons would there be in a normal session?
Right,
tell us a little about the curriculum.
Well, that's another way that we're different. We're ongoing. So once we're in a facility, we are there. We've been at Metropolitan Ministries for like 6 years now, once a week visits. We've been at Sally House, Salvation Army Sally House in St. Pete for like 8 years now, once a week visits. And we're in two other facilities. We just started at CASA. But there's so many wonderful resources out there surrounding the humane education realm that we utilize.
Yeah.
And through other ways and stuff. So it's not a set curriculum.
But is there, I would think at least, I mean, it's some real long stints, obviously, at those places, which is fantastic. But I would guess at least that when you first go in somewhere and or the kids are first being exposed to this, that there are probably specific lessons that are wise from experience,
right,
to start with. So what are some of those first lessons? What are the things that are emphasized in those very kind of initial lessons that you have at any facility you go to?
The first lessons are always about the dog, how to act around a dog, how to take care of a dog. You know, I love to do the one where I ask the children what they want to be. What do they need to be healthy? And of course, there's things like food, water, exercise, doctor's visits. And then I ask them, what do they like to be happy? What makes them happy? And they say toys and playing and friends and family and things like that. And then I go to the dog and I say, what's the dog need to be healthy? Well, obviously, they're naming the same things that they need. And the same with, what do they need to be happy? They like friends, they like toys, they like playing. So it shows the children that they're really not that different, that the dogs are emotional, thinking, sentient beings. And so that really shows the children. And then, of course, bite prevention, how to act around dogs, that, you know, we're the humans. We need to be aware of the dog's body language, you know, if they're nervous for any reason or if they're showing some sort of, hey, you know, leave me alone, how to approach a dog, how to let them smell your hand, different real basic things like that to get them used to being around the dog and things like that.
Yeah. I would think from that, the very first part of the very first lesson about asking what they like to do and describing what the dogs like to do, that must, I would guess, spur a kind of a light bulb moment from the get-go, right, where the kids are saying,
wow,
hey, I like to do the same thing, and which to me seems even more pivotal for later when you're trying to establish these dogs have been through some things, not great things like you've been, and they managed to forgive. So it seems like they've already said, like, hey, you and these dogs are very similar on some fundamental positive levels, and with some maybe not so great things you've been to, same kind of thing can and should happen, I guess.
Right. Yeah. And then we go on from there to where, like I mentioned, it's not always about the dogs. While the dogs are there, you know, like I said, I've done everything from bringing a yoga instructor to, you know, someone who shows them healthy eating, you know, to love themselves and start healing themselves and to show some of the wonderful things that are out there in the world that are great to explore and live for and how to give back to others, you know. So it really is a wide range of lessons, again, all about healing the children so they don't go on to repeat those behaviors that they've learned.
Sure.
You know, we've done everything from, you know, why it's not good to keep a dog chained out in the backyard its whole life. You know, that they're emotional thinking beings. They love to be around their people and their family. And, you know, what that could cause as far as the dog's personality and more aggression. And, you know, it's sad. And, you know, how they're a lifetime commitment. So it's not about having a dog for 9 years and then dumping it at the pound, you know, because life changes. You know, that makes them sad and afraid. And
sure.
So.
Yeah. Key lessons. So typically, Kim, let's say again that you've gone into some place for the first time, so therefore presumably those kids are hearing the curriculum and meeting Brooklyn or a dog like Brooklyn for the first time. How many sessions, and I'm sure obviously it's going to vary a little bit from kid to kid, but just generally, how many sessions before you kind of start to see some growth, some change, some embracing of kind of the messages that you're you know, obviously they're ultimately to impart. I mean, is it three lessons or is it just no way to say?
I don't think there's really a way to say it. All depends. And for example, there was one evening, there was a little girl, I guess she was maybe about 3 or 4, so definitely at talking age.
Mm-hmm.
We went and somehow, apparently she'd been there for 2 weeks, but I had missed her. Either she was at bath time or whatever when I'd mm-hmm. go. Because you got to remember, at a lot of these places, the children live there too. So,
right.
you know, they might be at bath time. They might be seeing a therapist when I'm there. So I don't necessarily see them every single time I'm there.
I see.
Some of the kids, you know, there's always kids there mm-hmm. available. But so this little girl I hadn't seen her. So we walk in the back door and a staff member's carrying her out of a room, holding her. And the little girl looks at the dog and goes, oh, doggy, 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 and gets really excited, which, you know, normal reaction, that's fine.
Yeah.
But the staff member kind of freaked out and was like, oh my God. And I'm like, what? What happened? And she says, no, she hasn't spoken for the 2 weeks that she's been here. We didn't even know she could talk yet. So that was immediate reaction just from seeing the dog.
Yeah.
And they actually reported back to me. We depend a lot on the staff to report back, you know, because we're there for an hour once a week. So a lot of their behaviors might change or they might show different things.
Period. Yeah.
Right. So we depend on the staff to report back to us any changes in behavior. And they said after this little girl got down and she started petting the dog and all the other kids came around, you could see the little girl watching all the other kids. And I don't want to make it sound like this miracle, but they said that she started reacting to the children better after that evening, like opening up to the other children, because it was that commonality of that all the kids had of around the dog.
That seems
kind
really
of opened
powerful
her up.
And really transformative, really,
yes.
in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And just to sort of follow up on what you said about that, a lot of the places that you go, the kids live there. I'm going to assume that means they, in those cases, they've been removed from whatever home situation they were in for the very reasons that they were talking, right? There was some sort of neglect, or abuse that led to them being removed from the home and placed in one or more of these
facilities. At the group homes,
yeah.
Obviously CASA, which is the women's a shelter over in St. Pete. They're mm-hmm. there with their mothers, and they have an after school program. So it's a little different with each facility. Metropolitan Ministries is the homeless shelter.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously they're living there with their family. And they have an evening program every evening for the children. So we've been going on Tuesday evenings forever. So yeah, it varies from shelter to shelter.
Sure. And then when you get 6 or 8 years in, as you are at some of these facilities, then are you kind of improvising? I mean, like over the course of that 6 or 8 years, obviously some kids are going to cycle in and,
right.
and hopefully heal and feel better and be in better circumstances and, mm-hmm. and depart. So, but I'm sure some are there for a number of those years. So if you've been going into a place for 6 or 8 years, are you kind of later improvising what the lessons, what the curriculum would be? Because it seems like you wouldn't necessarily always start over, or I don't know how you would decide when to start over if you did.
Right.
So how does that
work? You start
work?
Seeing new faces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's when you know to start over. And even if there are some that have been there for many years, but the majority are new faces, you can kind of start over. And then a lot of times I like to incorporate the older ones, because our age range for our curriculum is really elementary school.
Oh, I see.
Right. So when you start getting them older in there, because you never know the age, I like to help have them more or less become our assistants, you know, help us with the little
sure.
kids. So they're learning through
teachers,
helping.
Aides and
things like that. But yeah, they do rotate out. So you get a new group in. Like I said, even if there's the few that are there that have been there a while, they like to be the ones that know and to tell the other ones, well, yeah, this is how you ask and approach a dog. Or
And how many dogs work with you in the program? Like how many in addition to Brooklyn do we have here with us?
I have 3 of my own. They're all the teacher's personal dogs.
Okay.
Right now I have one other teacher, Kathy Mitchell, who is awesome. And she's been over at the Homeless Empowerment Project in Clearwater for about 6 years now.
And she has one or more
she
dogs.
She has one dog.
Okay.
Big old lab.
Yeah. Because I guess I was curious too, is if you go to a certain place, if you've started off bringing, let's say, Brooklyn, do you always bring Brooklyn just for consistency's sake?
Yes.
Or as part of the experience, like, hey, now it's time to meet another dog that you'll also love and maybe broaden your...
We do have guest dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I usually bring Brooklyn
guest
and
dogs. I like that.
Guest dogs.
Yeah.
The only thing I require is that the dogs be AKC Canine Good Citizen Certified, which I know you'll get into in a minute. But, you know, it's more of a behavioral type situation. But I have Olivia and Brooklyn that are my regulars. I didn't bring Olivia today. It's easier with this type of thing to have one. But Olivia has a whole story of her own. And then I have Little Bronx. Yes, I have a Bronx and a Brooklyn. Well, Bronx is basically
I'm detecting
retired.
A theme here, possibly.
I've never been to New York, but...
Wow, okay. Well, that's a different theme.
A different theme. Bronx came with that name, and he's a scruffy terrier like Brooklyn, and I've had him forever. And I thought it would be cute to have a Brooklyn when I got her about 7 months ago. So, yeah. So, yes, these children come with attachment disorders as well, because many of them, everything they've ever known is gone. You know, people that they've trusted,
right.
Places that they've lived, things like that.
Yeah.
So it's important to have that same teacher, that instructor, that same dog going into a facility, mm-hmm. because the children learn to depend on that.
Right.
And see
they
that,
probably
that
really
familiar
forge
face.
A connection
yes.
there that
yes.
way. Again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. I'm speaking with Kim Skrovanek, founder of the Humane Education Connection, whose programs include canines helping kids in crisis. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So one of our emailers says, I have a 7-month-old Great Dane Labrador puppy. She absolutely loves children and can sense uh-huh. illnesses in people. She needs to be a service animal. How do I get involved in your program? And she asked to please contact her, which I don't know about that, but the other way around. Let's right off the bat, and we'll get to it a couple more times too, is say the website is humaneeducationconnection.org. And how does that work, though, if someone did want to get involved in the program or get their dog involved in the program? How does that work, or is that even...
It is possible.
Yeah.
It is possible mm-hmm. in a few ways.
Probably
and,
very selective,
I would
think.
You can forward me her email.
Yeah, okay.
yes. It's a different ways. Like I said, I do require the dogs to be rescue dogs for all the different reasons that we have just discussed.
Sure.
And that they get their AKC Canine Good Citizen certification, you know, because it varies according to the facilities what they require, and coming through our program, since we're insured and everything else... that's, you know, good. And then I evaluate the dog to make sure behavioral wise and things like that. No, just been doing it for so long. I just like to make sure myself that
sure.
I trust,
right.
you know,
no,
and see the dog's behavior and body language around children and things like that. The thing that makes it challenging for volunteers to be an instructor with their dog is that it is ongoing, like we just discussed. And
yeah.
so they have to be pretty committed.
Long-term. Right.
Right.
Anything less than that, or if you're uncertain about that,
right.
would fly against what you're
right.
saying.
Right. And of course, they come with me for training and see the different, you know, since we don't have a set curriculum and we have different available resources out there, I show them, you know, those
yeah.
resources and where they can find those and things like that. So they go through a training period with me coming to the facility and again, testing their dog. They do have to be ongoing. And if they can't commit once a week visits to a facility, then that's where the guest dogs come in.
Mm-hmm. I see. I got
because
you.
I
yeah.
do love, while Brooklyn would still be there and Olivia would still be there, there would be a night or two to where a guest dog would come in once in a while, because the children do love to see other dogs and other types of dogs and other sizes and, you know, to learn about all that. So it becomes a guest type learning experience.
Now, these are all volunteer mm-hmm. opportunities, mm-hmm. right? Okay, mm-hmm. because just seeing a new emailer saying, hi there, just listening to your program, and I recently had an unexpected work layoff and have some time. Used to have a local rescue agency, too, and have 2 rescues of my own, BA in biology and love dogs. How can one get involved?
Oh.
So, again, I think,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
if they can...
Yeah, forward me any of those, please.
Yeah.
I would love
so,
to talk
again,
to them, because I can always work out. Go to
humaneeducationconnection.org, and I will try to, at least indirectly, forward these emails to Kim. And let's get a call involved. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Kim Skrovanek.
Yeah, hi. My name's Denise. I'm calling from St. Pete.
Hi.
And I just need the information for, my daughter is a counselor in a middle school now, but she will probably be working in an elementary school that has Sally House kids mostly.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, so I just need your information. So, I don't know, maybe she'll be equipped with your information automatically, but if not, I'd like to have it so I can give it to her.
Oh, that's awesome.
So again, yeah, the name of the organization is Humane Education Connection. The website is humaneeducationconnection.org.
And I don't mind giving out my email.
Okay, feel free.
It's real simple. It's kim@humaneeducationconnection.org.
Humane Intervention.
No. Humane Education.
Education.
Connection.
.org.
Okay, I'll give it to my daughter, because I'm sure she'll, if she doesn't automatically get it from the school, I'm sure she'll love to have it.
Awesome.
Okay, thanks
thank
for
you.
Your call and
thank
thanks
you.
For your interest. That's great. Thank you. And we got another email that says, dogs bless WMNF, another great show. Thank you. I'm not sure. There's no punctuation there, so I'm not sure which things go with which things, but very nice sentiment. Thank you. So, Kim, in sort of our remaining time, I want to be sure to, as I said I would, come back to the dogs. So, again, as we've clearly established and sort of underscored, these are rescue dogs. But how do you identify, is there certain shelters, first of all, that you go to? And either way, how do you identify dogs that are in a shelter? They're, by definition, therefore, rescue dogs by sitting there. Mm-hmm. How do you say, well, this one, Brooklyn, is going to be great for our program? I mean, how do you determine that? And then what happens once you do?
Well, so it varies again. When I first got into it, Bronx was my first one, and I met Bronx through a rescue. So I was able to foster him for a little bit, foster to adopt. So I was able to determine his personality at that point. That was the same with Olivia. Olivia came from a wonderful rescue, Aussie and me, Karen Kroll, who is, she's an amazing woman. And so I was able to foster Olivia, and Olivia came from a horrible backyard breeding abuse situation and then was abused at the pound. It was caught on video. And so Karen, thank goodness, rescued her from the pound and came to me to foster. And so just through working with her and, you know, taking her to training and things like that, you can kind of determine, you know, what her personality is going to be like. I have test kids in the neighborhood. Sounds horrible.
Yeah. No.
In that neighborhood, friends and kids. I call them test kids.
Sure. No, that's crucial, though, right?
Can tell from a dog's body language. And that's a lot of what I teach children, too, is watch their body language. Because a wagging tail does not necessarily mean a dog's friendly. It's according to where it's wagging, how high, how low, everything. So little intricacies.
Yeah.
When I said that wrong, I know. But yeah, in Brooklyn, I did get Brooklyn from the pound in Lakeland. She was found as a stray up in Lakeland. And when she was nervous in the pound and a little afraid, but when I took her out to visit with her a little bit and stuff, her nervousness came out as licking my face.
Yeah. a trait that continues to this day.
It continues to this day, but now it's not nervousness.
Yeah.
She's over here being videoed and
she's a star in the making.
Yeah. And then, again, you know, go through a training period with them and testing them.
What does that training involve? What exactly?
I take them to a basic training course. I have a local trainer. Oh my goodness. I am so sorry. Her name leaves me right now.
Okay. We'll think of it or we'll come back.
Yeah.
To it. No problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And, have taken them to her and things, and she's just wonderful. Yeah.
Great. Here's the other thing is, so you find them, they go through that training and you've done the test kids in the neighborhood. Is that the steps or is there anything else before you would say, okay, they're ready to go with me to, Metropolitan Ministries or wherever I'm going next week or whatever?
Right. I usually try to get them in a group of kids as well, because it's a little different. One or two neighborhood kids and a whole group of kids like that.
Yeah.
So we do that. And then they have to go through their AKC Canine Good Citizen Certification, which is a series of behavioral type tests. And the same trainer will do that for me, take them through that and determine their personality. And so.
Yeah. And I'd be interested to know, even though the core sort of principle almost for you requires that these are rescue dogs, has there been any facility who has been uneasy about that just because, again, some of the dogs that you're specifically selecting have been through some pretty horrible situations? So for some people, they say, oh, yeah, that's great that they've been trained and AKC certified, et cetera. But might they still be a little bit unpredictable, or might something still happen when they're face to face with a kid? You know what I mean? Like,
right. I haven't had any of the facilities come back with any concerns about that.
Okay. Good.
There's a few, you know, it's always, I'm not breed specific, anything like that.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah.
There's a few facilities that have requested, you know, because of insurance and stuff, they can't help it either.
I'm wondering about liability kind of concerns they might have.
And that's something else I teach. You never know. I have one dog, Scott. That's why I have four dogs total. Sky does not visit children. Sky is officially a rescue dog. She was rescued from a pound, but I consider her basically my only dog from a breeder, because she was basically bought from a breeder, dumped at the pound at only 3 months old to me that same weekend. So she's never experienced anything. She's the only one who developed issues at a year and a half. She has some, you know, fear issues with sound, and, you know, so I would never take her in anywhere,
right.
And you know.
And that you couldn't know until that developed,
right,
when it did.
So I always adopt older dogs. Mm-hmm. I don't get puppies because obviously when she hit that age of a year and a few months, because I had her at training, you know, I took her everywhere, socialization, she loved everybody. In a year and a few months, fear issues kicked in for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So I try to tell people, don't think because they're a rescue that they're necessarily going to come with issues. Because then I have Olivia, who was known abused horribly, and she is the sweetest dog ever and loves everybody.
Yeah.
So you just never know. They're individual just like people.
For sure. Just in our last moment or two here, Kim, but now what kind of expenses, if any, does the organization incur in taking these dogs around and visiting these facilities?
Right, right. Well, there's definitely the expenses of the insurance, the liability insurance, the materials, the educational supplies for the children. The more we're able to get supplies for the children, we can, you know, I've done everything from monthly birthday parties for the children who, you know, birthdays are that month, to educational supplies when school's coming up.
Sure. So how is that funded then?
Through donations, through grants.
Right. Mm-hmm. So along those lines, I think there is an event coming up towards the end of the month would help for that very purpose. So tell us a little bit about the St. Pete Spring Fest Fling and Fairy Costume Contest, which is certainly a mouthful, but it sounds like a fun event.
It's going to be so much fun.
Yeah.
Of course, there's going to be all your vendors there. There's going to be rescues there, so you can come out and find your own little pup. There is going to be costume contest, pet talent contest, and in the costume contest, they've got to dress as like a fairy or the male version, which I guess could be like a wizard, an elf, a leprechaun, and Pet Food Warehouse over in St. Pete. There's going to be one winner in each category. And Pet Food Warehouse is giving a $300 shopping spree to each winner.
Very cool.
Yeah, they are the best place ever.
Well, we should say where this is actually taking place.
Yes.
So it's Unity Campus, 460 46th Avenue North in St. Pete. Mm-hmm. And it's happening from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Yes.
Again on Saturday, April 29th. So, Kim, thank you so much. We've been speaking with Kim Skrovenek from the Humane Education Connection. One more time, the website is humaneeducationconnection.org. And thanks for all the great work and all the great work for both dogs and kids and how they're helping each other. That's fantastic. Thanks again.
Thank you.
All right. In a few moments, I'll talk with Amber Simpson about the 7th Annual Tampa Vegan Bake Sale happening April 22nd at Mojo Books and Records. If you like baked goods, cats, books, and music, or any combination thereof, you might find yourself interested in this event. Right now, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner with something from Ron White, with his take on the late orca Tillicum. This is a piece called Killer Whale from Ron White in today's Comedy Corner. Talking animals.
Early last year in Florida, SeaWorld of Florida, an animal trainer was killed by a killer whale. Huh? Turns out there's a reason they didn't name them ocean ponies. Some things are exactly as they seem, folks. Killer whales kill. Pilot whales wear dark sunglasses. I'm not sure how the sperm whale got his name, but I'm not getting in the pool. That whale got his job back. They put that whale back in the show. Now, when I first saw it on the internet, I mean, this will be world news. It wasn't even news at all. They put the whale back. This whale killed three people. This is a serial killer whale. And he got his job back? If that would have happened at SeaWorld of Texas, that whale would have gone straight to an electric pool. And that's just a regular pool with a toaster thrown in it.
That was Ron White with a piece called Killer Whale, taken from his album A Little Unprofessional. Now on to my conversation with Amber Simpson about the 7th Annual Tampa Vegan Bake Sale. Let's welcome Amber Simpson back to Talk Animals. Good morning, Amber.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals.
It's good to be here.
Great. So let's briefly review the history here. When and how did the bake sale begin?
Well, this is our seventh year, and it began whenever Mojo reached out to the community actually wanting to have a vegan bake sale at their yearly record store celebration. So one of our volunteers, Lisa, jumped on that, and we've been doing it ever since.
That's cool. I guess over these years, it's probably grown bigger and grander and more fab.
Yes. Each year, we seem to have more volunteers, more bakers, more people that expect us there, that come out, you know, ready to grab their cupcakes and muffins and listen to some music and buy some limited edition records.
I want to get into some of the various offerings that might be there, but let's make sure we've hit all the key details for people listening who might already be enticed by the notion of baked goods that are great, record store on record store day, and other things too. So this is April 22nd.
Yes.
At Mojo Books and Records, and it's mm-hmm. pretty much all day, right? I think is it 8 a.m. to 4 p.m.?
Yes, we have it from 8 to 4. We suggest people come out as early as possible, because last year we actually sold out before 4 o'clock. So.
Yeah, don't miss out. Right. And then also, I think it's kind of extra cool this year that it also marks Mojo's 10th anniversary, right, that day?
Yes, it's their 10th anniversary, so they'll be doing some extra special stuff during the event as well. So.
That's great. Also, Amber, let's talk a little bit, because one of the things that there's so many cool elements to this event, at least if you ask me. And so one of the many is that the bake sale proceeds help homeless and feral cats. How so? How do those monies from that bake sale work in terms of helping those kind of cats?
Okay, so what we do, we are a group of volunteers from Animal Advocacy of Tampa Bay. We also volunteer a lot with Florida Voices for Animals. And what we do is we raise as much money as we can, and we reach out to all the local rescue groups that we love, like Cat Call, Cat Crusaders, St. Francis, even cats that need to be saved from our local shelters, the animal services, or helping out, you know, Humane Society of Tampa Bay, who we support. Basically, any cat in our county who needs help, especially this time of year with all the kittens, it's kitten season. We help with their medical expenses. We help get them spayed and neutered with the feral kitties. We do the TNR, which is the trap, neuter, and return. Any kind of emergency situations where someone may need emergency surgery, anything that we can do to help any group in our community, we donate the money to go directly to the animals, 100% of it.
So really just the bake sale proceeds just go into a war chest, in a sense, that any particular needs
yes.
for the feral cat and other homeless cat community, those monies are there available for that purpose.
Yep. Last year, we were able to help so many sick kittens that were found on the street that were, you know, basically half dead. We were able to donate for all their medical needs, and we were able to trap and spay and neuter a ton of cats, which is great because then that, you know, leaves less homeless cats and less kittens out on the street. So
for
anything
sure.
we can do, we do it.
That's great. Again, that alone seems like very notable, worthy
yeah.
cause here for coming out to buy those goods. So let's talk about some of those baked goods. Now, I know I can't really, it's not sort of political for you to probably say, like, hey, here's some of my favorite baked goods that I know we'll be offering, just because it'd be like saying, here's my favorite cat or whatever. But
yeah.
but maybe just for a range of things for people listening, maybe you could just cite some of the things. And also, I have kind of an inside question from someone who I think saw you talk about this on Facebook maybe previously, but the one question is, will the chocolate Easter eggs be available at the bake sale?
So somebody must have been looking at my Facebook.
Yeah. Well, we all are. Yeah.
If I can find a way to keep them from melting, I will definitely bring some, but I can tell you if I do bring the chocolate Easter eggs, which would be peanut butter filled or kind of a take on a vegan Cadbury cream egg filled,
wow.
that they will go super fast, so whoever is wanting that needs to be there right away.
Yeah, that you got to get there at 8:01 maybe at the latest.
Yes.
And but also for the purpose of not having them melt too, I think there's a few reasons to get there early for the Easter yes. eggs. Yeah. So, so what are some other, just kind of a random sampling of some other things that people could expect to find on sale there on the 22nd?
Okay, well, people's favorites always tend to be different flavors of cupcakes, the cinnamon rolls, anything with cheese, like we've done like pizza pockets and stuff like that, of course, vegan cheese. So those kind of things seem to sell out first. They happen to be favorite. Of course, everyone loves peanut butter, the peanut butter bars and cookies and cupcakes. We have usually have blueberry muffins and lemon muffins, all sorts of muffins, and sometimes we have different pies. We have every cookie you can think of, brownies. We try to have some savory things, like maybe some rosemary bread, stuff like that. So cookies, cakes, pies, biscuits, cinnamon rolls, cupcakes, anything you can think of.
Yeah, but it's also, you know, that there's things that people might have a certain thought in their head or image of, like, what a bake sale would involve, and this sounds like this far transcends those offerings. I mean, it includes those offerings too, but it sounds like there's a lot of things that you wouldn't necessarily think of first when you think of a bake sale. So whatever you have a hankering for is there, and then some.
Yes, and we even try to make sure that we have some gluten-free offerings for those who need that as well.
Well, you've thought of everything. I guess you've gotten this down over the last 7 years, so it sounds like it's been perfected. So again, so let's just review for people who may be tuning in a bit late. We're talking about the Tampa Vegan Bake Sale, 7th annual, no less, April 22nd at Mojo Books and Records from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Though again, Amber has wisely counseled people to get there early if they want to have their selection of the great items there. And again, Mojo will also be celebrating Record Store Day there and their 10th anniversary. And the proceeds from the bake sale go to help out the feral cat community. So, I mean, what's not to like? It's got everything.
Yes. Yep. Everything. Music, yummy baked goods, saving animals.
Yeah.
Fun, friends, everything.
Cannot beat it. So cool. All right. Well, Amber, well, good luck. I hope it's a massive turnout, and the people are smart enough to get there early for everything, including those fabled Easter eggs. And we'll talk to you soon. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks so much.
You bet.
Bye.
So I want to get back to something I mentioned at the top of the show, that we do have tickets, a pair of tickets, for a pledge of $400 to the Wani Festival Extravaganza. Again, the official dates are April 20th, 21, 22, but there's also on April 19th a special tribute to the late Butch Trucks. You know, this festival always had a kind of a heavy Allman Brothers involvement, and for many, many of the years they hosted it, and but there's still Allman-related performers and bands that still play, and they're going to be a nice tribute on the 19th to Butch Trucks. So, anyway, this is, of course, in Live Oak, Florida, and among the many bands performing over that weekend are Bob Weir and the Campfire Band, Widespread Panic, Dr. John, Trey Anastasio Band, J.J. Gray and Mofro, Modest Yahoo, Devin Allman Band, Cody and Luther Dickinson, Government Mule, Keller Williams, and more. Can you believe it? That's not even everybody. That's just some. Anyway, so a $400 pledge gets you a pair to the whole festival, the whole shebang, and also helps WMNF get off to a good start on its summer fun drive coming up soon. So again, if you are interested, please email dj@wmnf.org and we'll be happy to fix you up. Coming up at 11 on WMNF, it's Rob Lori and Radioactivity. Rolling into the noon hour, it constitutes a full 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, with contributions from members of the stellar WMNF staff, including, of course, Everyday Ethics with Craig Kopp. Meanwhile, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a copy of Pitbull, the amazing acclaimed book by Bronwyn Dickey. And the book I'm talking about is about to come out in paperback, but this one that I'm offering is the big, fabulous hardback edition. So right now, though, it's time for a few quick animal news and announcements, including that in an effort to protect pets and keep the community safe from disease, the Humane Society of Tampa Bay will offer vaccinations for dogs on Saturday, April 22nd from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the Good Samaritan Mission in Waimama. And let's just say the vaccinations are incredibly reasonably priced. We never can really talk specific prices on the air here, as you probably know, but it's quite a deal and quite an opportunity. So to find out more, call 813-876-4150 or go to HumaneSocietyTampa.org for the shot clinic on April 22nd. Also coming up on May 13th is the Puppy Love Benefit by Pet Pals Animal Shelter. That's May 13th at 6 to 10 p.m. at the Historic Coliseum. And there'll be all kinds of things going on there, including a silent love auction and aerialist entertainment by Moving Arts of Tampa, photo booth, and and just all kinds of stuff. Too many to even mention at our time, but that we have left there. But look into petpalanimalshelter.com for more details on how you can get tickets, etc., for the Puppy Love Benefit on May 13th. All right, we have just about reached the end of Talking Animals here. Rob Lawyer is up next with what amounts to 2 hours of radioactivity. I'll be back next Wednesday, April 19th, when my guest will be Wild Horse Advocate Ginger Catherines, founder of the Cloud Foundation, Emmy Award-winning producer, and will also be speaking in Tampa the following week. So please visit TalkingAnimals.net for audio archives and of every show we've ever broadcast. iTunes podcasts are available there too. There are also links to our Facebook page or Twitter feed and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and or me personally. Almost better to like me personally, just the way the whole algorithms work and stuff for paid posts and boosting them and all that. So yeah, do me, Duncan Strauss, and also if you can do Talking Animals radio show, so much the better, to hit them both. So you can also follow me on Twitter. That's all available at TalkingAnimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WMNF, Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Community conscious radio, handpicked music, and news. Thanks for listening. Speak with you again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Talking Animals.